Hi, I'm Terry Griffith. I'm here with my co-host Dee Boghetti, and we're Bark Radio.
Hey, Terry. Man, we have got a really great interview on board for today. Have you heard of Two Dogs, 2,000 Miles?
I have. I've been following them on the web for quite a while.
Well, it's Luke and his two dogs, Hudson and Murphy, and we have one of the three on the line, and he's going to tell us all about their walk from Austin to Boston. Hey, Luke.
Hey, Dee, Terry. Thanks for having us. Yeah, actually, you have one of the three, but I'm the least preferred.
Oh, you're
let me tell you, Hudson and Murphy, we're on Twitter, and Hudson and Murphy, I finally gave in and gave them their own Twitter account, and I think they're beating me now on followers.
Oh, boys. So, Luke, you're going to tell us a little bit maybe about how this all started for you. Why are you walking all this way, and what's it all about?
Sure. In 2004, my dog Malcolm was diagnosed with osteosarcoma, bone cancer, which is particularly aggressive in dogs, and it ultimately, like most cases do, spread to his lungs, and he was given rest in 2006, and he was my boy, and he was a big part of my life, and his loss devastated me, and the experience with canine cancer, never had a dog with cancer before, it really profoundly changed me, and I got the inspiration to just walk across the country and get out there, because I didn't know what canine cancer was. Heck, I didn't know dogs could have cancer before Malcolm, and I found out there are a whole lot of people just like me, so I decided to walk across the country with my other two dogs, Hudson and Murphy, and go out and talk about, tell people that not only do dogs get cancer, but they get the same type of cancer that people get.
Yeah, it kind of blew my mind when I had the same kind of experience, Luke, with my heart dog, and his name was Max, and his was lymphoma. And I had no idea until I lived through that and through his death.
It's from the people that I talk with, it seems like it never really occurs to you that dogs can get cancer, and then you're sort of blindsided. I know, especially I was, because I took great care of Malcolm. When I say Malcolm's my boy, I mean that literally. In fact, it's kind of funny. I always refer to Hudson and Murphy as my boys, and all the journalists and people I talk to, they have to like make a note. He's talking about his dogs. And I was like, no, I'm talking about my boys. But yeah. I had no idea that dogs could get cancer, and so basically, you know, taking great care of Malcolm like I did, you know, I had to become the premium dog food brands. He was exercised regularly, and he was diagnosed at a very young age of six, and it was just like, God, you know, I thought I did everything right, I did a tremendous amount of due diligence, you know, back in 2004. There wasn't as much research available on canine cancer, and nobody could tell me why Malcolm got cancer. And that's really what our mission is about, is discovering the cause of canine cancer. There's not a lot of research going on into cause and prevention right now. Most of the research is in comparative oncological studies, and so literally, I sold my truck, put my stuff in the storage in Hudson and Murphy, and I got on the road, and we're going to be walking 2,400 miles. We've covered 1,200 of those miles. We've gone from Austin, Texas to we're currently in a little town called Somerset, Ohio, and we're headed to Boston. So we've got about another year to go, and so we hope at the end of all of this that our focus, actually, canine cancer now is a lifetime commitment for me. So my goal, my burning desire, my drive is discovering the cause of canine cancer. What's causing it?
Well, I'll tell you what, that is such a worthwhile goal, and I think Terry and I feel the same about this. As you go along through the next year and even past next year, we'll do anything we can to help you and your boys get the word out, whatever that word is that you need gotten out. And if it's about getting funding for the right kind of research, whatever it is, we here at Bark Radio will do everything we can to help. Right, Terry?
Very, very supportive of this. Now, Luke, is there any leaders really in doing the research to try to find the cure or to find the cause, rather?
No, there really isn't. Like I said, most of the research being done now is clinical trials developing novel therapeutics. But you've got the Morris Animal Foundation, which just did a feasibility study, and the results of that were that most people wanted to know what's causing canine cancer. They're folding that up into their big canine cancer campaign. That's in the process. So they're really leading the charge right now. You've got a number of other really good foundations out there that are doing some great work in canine cancer. You've got the Animal Cancer Foundation, and you've got National Canine Cancer Foundation as well. So we've got pockets of people doing some great work, but I think that's wonderful. But personally, I think while developing novel therapeutics is very important. Because dogs are kind of the canary in the coal mine for humans, right? I mean, our dogs get exposed to pretty much basically everything that we're exposed to, but at a much higher and much faster metabolic rate. So that's one of the reasons why it seems like that we're seeing the incidence of canine cancer on the rise. Not only is it becoming more common, but what's shocking, actually, is that we're seeing it's being diagnosed at a much younger age. I've met a number of cancer dogs on our travels thus far, and the one that really hit me the most was just a lovely Pembroke Welsh Corgi named Ephraim that was diagnosed with lung cancer at the age of 2.
Oh, my gosh.
Can you believe
that? How did that happen?
And it died 1 month before its third birthday, and just their family they weren't smokers or anything like that, and it was just it was crazy. So we're doing something wrong, whether it's lawn chemicals or multiple vaccinations or everyone thinks there's a nutritional component to it, but we're doing something wrong, and that's what we need to figure out.
Absolutely, and that is just the saddest story. I always say I want my dogs to live, 30, 40 years. Typically labs like I have, if we get 12 out of them, we're thrilled to death. But to think that a dog could develop cancer when they're still kids, my gosh.
Right.
A 2-year-old dog is almost still a puppy. That is so sad.
That's right. I've heard some cases of puppies being diagnosed, but I've never seen anything. I've heard mentioned something, but you're right. And that's one of the myths that it's part of our awareness piece is that cancer is no longer a disease of old age in dogs. In fact, I think one of the statistics I read recently is that cancer now is the number one cause of death in dogs 2 and older. And that's shocking. If you think about, within just the 4 years that I've been, I guess it'll be 5 years again, that I've been brought into the world of canine cancer, that's just, that statistic is just shocking. It really is.
It is shocking. And I think the more people who are dog lovers, and they are everywhere, who get this message, the better off we're all going to be, because I want you to reach people, like you've said, who don't know dogs even get cancer. Because
right.
If they have dogs enough in their lifetime, they will be touched by it.
Right.
Why not try and find that cause before it touches decades and decades and decades more of dogs?
Oh, exactly, Dee. But if you look at the trend lines, it's the trend lines that I find so disturbing, though, because if dogs now are getting hit with cancer at a much younger age, what's the average age of a dog going to be in 10 or 20 years? Is it going to be 4 years old, 5 years old?
Oh.
That's what we don't want to see, and that's why the canine cancer research is critical. I feel personally that canine cancer is a crisis of epidemic proportions.
Well, I'll tell you what, from everything you're telling us, I'd say I agree.
Yeah, I had no idea that dogs that young were getting it. I just thought it was an older or elderly dog type syndrome.
I can send you. We did a canine cancer calendar last year, and I can send you. Actually, we've got a great PowerPoint presentation, and I talk about some of the dogs that they're diagnosed at the age of 2 and 3, 4. I met this beautiful Bernese Mountain Dog named Cagney in Memphis, Tennessee, diagnosed bone cancer and had amputation at the age of 4. And it is definitely no longer a disease of old age in dogs.
Well, we would love to get our hands on that PowerPoint presentation, and we will help in that way, you know, spread the word in any way we can, if you'll allow us to share it with the world.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's kind of, I'm not being from the world of veterinary science or anything like that. You know, I've been kind of learning as we're going, and the most important way that people can help us right now is actually, you know, we like to say we're friend raising, because it's just me and the boys on the road. You know, fundraising is not our primary purpose. We do accept donations to help pay for the cost of the travel across the country, but, you know, we also have some puppy up merchandise and so on and so forth. But really, this is phase one of a much bigger commitment in my lifetime. And when we get to Boston, that's when phase two will kick in, and that's when we're really going to focus on raising a lot of money for cause and prevention research in canine cancer. But when people ask how can they help out now, we say, look, just, you know, we're building a network of people who have been personally touched by canine cancer as we walk across the country. We're friend-raising. And, follow us as we go across the country. Be a part of Two Dogs, 2,000 Miles. And that's the most important thing because, you know, we need that network, that grassroots network of people who have been touched by canine cancer. That's the most important piece.
I love that phrase, friend raising.
I do too.
That is just so appropriate. I haven't personally experienced it, and hopefully, knock on wood, I never will have to have one of my dogs go through that. But I am absolutely supportive of finding a cure and finding a cause and knowing what the heck is going on with it.
And, Luke, I'm a child of the 70s, so the whole grassroots piece of this, the whole, yes, friend raising, so strikes a chord with me, and there are a lot of people out there like me, and if we can help you get, you know, 100,000, 200,000, a million followers for that time when you have finished your 2 years and you go on to phase two, man, we'll just be thrilled if we can help you do that.
Great. Well, I'm excited. I look forward to you guys are based out of Virginia, right? Is it North Carolina or Virginia?
We're in Central Virginia.
Okay, Virginia. Yeah, well, we'll be in your neck of the woods, and I look very, very, very forward to meeting with you. And I think, like we talked about before, is that we're going to spend some time on Capitol Hill to see if we can get some more money freed up
right.
for comparative oncological research. So we could definitely use your help there. That's for sure.
Well, we will be there, and we will get as many other of our like there as we possibly can. And we can't wait to meet you and the boys in person. That is going to be fabulous. We'll bring a couple of our dogs along, and they can all just have a good sniff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, Terry, I want to speak to what you said before. And it's great that someone who's never personally been touched by canine cancer is taking such an active interest in our walk, because statistics say now that if you are a dog lover and you own multiple dogs within your lifetime, one of your dogs is going to get cancer. And so that's why, you know, when I talk to people that, you know, haven't had any experiences with it, you know, I say, well, come listen, you know, come learn about it and listen about it and start learning now, because unfortunately, you're gonna experience it in your lifetime. And the second piece of the awareness, education, and outreach, which really is our primary objective, is, you know, the world of canine cancer, veterinary oncology, really is a rounding error to human medical science, and we're decades behind. There are no screening early diagnostic tests for cancer. So I call it the three L's. The way that you tell that your dog has cancer are lumps, lesions, and lameness. And all of those, you know, when you do feel lumps or see lesions or notice lameness in your dog, you know, the cancer is already pretty developed and pretty established in a dog at that time. So, like with Malcolm, as soon as I saw even a slight limp, we took him in and had a radiograph, an X-ray done, and the cancer was already well within his front limb. So if you think about that there aren't really any screening technologies or early diagnostic technologies out there. We're really decades and decades behind human science. And so another one of really my objectives is to get the world of human medical science to work with and collaborate with companion pets. Like I said before, it's a whole area called comparative oncology, using dogs and cats too, as a model for understanding and researching cancers in humans. So it's been hard for me going out and trying to talk with and work with human cancer organizations, because they have this sort of stigma that, you know, hey, look, you know, we're human cancer over here, and while we support and applaud what you're doing, you're dog cancer over there. And I really want it's one of my missions to break down those barriers and impediments, because it's like, hey, guys, we have millions and millions of cases of dogs and cats with cancer every year, and with pre-existing cases of cancer, and we should use them to benefit not only pets but people too. Helping getting the word out about canine cancer, that's another piece of it. Just, you know, talking. So anytime you talk to an organization that's doing research in human cancer, you know, say, hey, well, look, you know, do you know that dogs and cats get cancer just like breast cancer, just like women do? Another important part of this awareness.
You know, the thing that kind of seems mind-boggling to me is that, given the amount of money that's spent in this country on, you know, domesticated pets, that they can't see the financial gain behind coming up with some testing and pieces around it. I mean, it's the wrong motivation, but it seems like at least it is a motivation that should draw some of these companies in and say, hey, I'm going to spend a little effort on this.
Right. Right, you're exactly right, Terry. I think someone sent me an article some months ago about a British company that was working on a diagnostic test, a screening test for lymphoma and osteosarcoma in dogs. But I think it was in the testing phase, and so I'm quite certain there are actually companies working on it, because the truth is, people now are spending a lot of money on their pets, like it should be. I think the last statistic I read, something like, say, 70% of all pet owners view their pets as family members, which is a good, you know, good sign for our country. So it's gonna, you know, we're getting there. It's just, unfortunately, I'm impatient by nature. So,
man, we're so glad, because so are we.
Yeah, exactly. When you've lost, like yours, Max was your heart dog. Well, Malcolm was mine. So you have to understand something about me. I come from the South. I was born and raised in Texas. And down in the South, we love our animals, but humans come first, and that's just sort of the order of things, because most of the animals are working animals in Texas. And while I grew up around household pets, dogs and cats, and I consider myself an animal lover, I never had the close, deep bond with another dog like I had with Malcolm. In fact, when I first got Malcolm, he was a gift from an ex-girlfriend, so I should have been suspicious at the start. And when I got Malcolm, I sat him down. He was a wee lad, all of about 2 months or 2 months or so, and I sat him down and I had the father-son talk. You know, this is my house, respect my rules, and don't chew on my loafers. And the last thing I said was, and I don't do any of that baby talk like girls do. And I swear, Dee and Terry, he broke me in a week. You know, I was singing good morning songs to him, coming up with songs, just coming up with songs, you know, for him. I was planning my day around him, always looking for an excuse to go to the pet store to buy him yet another toy and this and that and treats. And I golf, so he very quickly became my daddy. And I came up with names like one of his nicknames was Smiley Britches. I mean, what kind of grown man sits around and comes up with names, pet names for dogs? Well, in Texas, you don't, but... So I he changed everything for me.
Well, I think I think that happens so often with people, and I mean I grew up in a household where the dogs were hunting dogs, but it didn't make any difference. The Brittany Spaniel that my dad had when I was a kid was still my best friend. I'd go hang out in his doghouse with him. So that from very early on, but in recent years, in the last decade, I've gotten so heavily involved with dogs. And the day that when I was training my yellow lab to be a wilderness search and rescue dog, and about a year into it, I'll never forget this. She looked at me, I looked at her, and something changed that day, because we both figured out that we were partners. We were equal partners. And that moment was so extraordinary for me. And now she's retired, and Murphy, my 4-year-old lab, is my therapy dog, and he's my partner. And it's like all the goofy stuff that you're talking about, oh, yeah. Do they have pet names? Do I talk to my dogs, sing to my dogs, play with my dogs? Well, absolutely. And even though I'm a girl, I know, Terry, guys would do it too.
Perhaps.
But it's all good.
It really is. And I, you know, it's funny you make the statement about not doing that in Texas, because it made me chuckle when you said that. But I see a lot of guys, and I'm a pretty good-sized boy myself, and, you know, the dog comes in the room, and I turn into that 12-year-old kid, and it's just out the window. You know, I'm just happy to be playing with the dog.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they bring out the best in us, that's for sure. You know, I talk a lot about you know, dogs as being good models for us understanding cancers in humans, but, you know, it's a much bigger issue that I don't talk enough about. I was working on a blog last night about it, about how dogs serve a much greater model for us as human beings. You know, it's like dogs are like the perfect distillment of the best of all attributes of people. And they do. They bring out the goodness in people that way. And it's just amazing what they do for us.
That's a powerful statement you just made.
It is, and it's a very true statement. And I think that statement just kind of wraps it all up. It's what you're about. It's what we're about. We are such total dog geeks, and the more we work with them, the more dogs we meet, the better we understand them and hang with them, the more we see what you're talking about. They so get life and what life is supposed to be about.
That's right. That's right. You know, I journal in multiple fashions, both online and also I keep a moleskin with me, and just take notes down. And it's just I have, you know, countless stories where I'm learning things from them. It's really kind of amazing that you know how Hudson and Murphy and I truly have become a pack.
Mm-hmm.
I have a goatee, and so you know, it's turning a little gray, and I tell people it's like, no, I'm not turning gray, I'm turning Pyrenees.
You're going to match the boys.
But it is. I mean, you know, it is amazing to me about how many lessons and how many things that I'm learning from Hudson and Murphy. Just simple life truisms and lessons. And, boy, I tell you, Malcolm was the inspiration to get me on the walk. But, you know, if it wasn't for Hudson and Murphy, you know, I could never do something as difficult as walking across the country, because the truth be told, it's not easy. It's a tough living life on the road. It's kind of tough at times and stuff. It's been a great, wonderful adventure, but it's tough. And if it wasn't for Hudson and Murphy there, and the days that when I had to dig down deep to keep going, you know, they motivate me. You know, they inspire me to keep going, and we have an amazing relationship, partnership. I love the word you use, Dee. We have an amazing partnership, the three of us.
Well, I know you do. I've, you know, read so much on the Internet about you guys, and just hearing you talk about them, you're blessed to have them. They're blessed to have you, and I think those of us who are trying to do something, trying to make a difference in the lives of dogs and their humans, it's just an incredible journey you're on. We thank you for doing it, and we want to be there along the way to do our little bit to help you out. I know we've been talking for a while, but I know there's another piece that you wanted to mention, and that's about rescue dogs.
Oh, yeah. yeah, you know, it's amazing how many different ways I've been transformed and changed and enlightened on the road. And one of the ways is, you know, I always considered, once I had Malcolm, I always thought I was a dog lover. And I had never spent a second or a moment of my time in a humane society or a shelter. Although Murphy was a rescue, he was actually rescued by my girlfriend at the time. So I got on the road, started walking, and met and did a few events with a couple of shelters, and I've never been on the inside of a shelter before, and I had this apprehension, you know, I had this image in my mind of, you know, dogs that were just, were just in miserable condition. And I just thought, man, if I go in there, it's going to break my heart. And that's this kind of myth that I had in my mind. And so it was in Texarkana, and I said, it was the first place. I said, I actually would like to take a day off from walking and go and volunteer and just go in there and let them know, let the shelter people know that spend all of their time, give all of their heart, do such a tough and sometimes thankless job rescuing animals. I want to go and show them that I support what they do, that I love and respect what they do. And so in Texarkana, I volunteered for the first time. And I got to tell you, for the first, 15 minutes, my stomach was like in knots. But I just got in there and I saw all of these beautiful animals. And I just lost all my inhibitions and just made it all about them. And the day that I had with them. And the first job I had was actually kind of cool. I got to take pictures of all the dogs that we then uploaded and put on the Pet Finder. So I got to be the cameraman. So I had all these dogs, and it's really kind of cool because I didn't have any experience. So trying to get them to pose was pretty challenging for me. So anyway, it was such a fun day for me. It was such a wonderful, enlightening experience that now whenever we have the chance and we have the connection, because I have like 6 volunteers and they help with all of the back-end stuff, event planning and coordinating transportation, logistics, and stuff like that. And that's a lot of work for the 6 volunteers that I have. And so whenever whenever I'm able to, I like to just take a day off from the walk and go and volunteer at the local shelter or Humane Society. And I've been doing it now. I've done that dozens of times. And, boy, I got to tell you, it's changed me. I never in my life did I have any idea that pet overpopulation was this just tremendous. It's just been amazing. It's kind of funny now because now what most people have me do is actually walk dogs, and everybody kind of jokes like, you spend your entire day walking dogs, and when you take a day off, you're walking dogs.
Yes, different dogs.
Exactly. So I'm a big fan of shelters and rescues and what they do now, and it's just been a wonderful experience.
Well, I'm so delighted that that's just another part of you and what you are doing, and because it's something that we talk about on Bark Radio a lot.
Very mm-hmm. passionate about the spay and neuter and the rescue groups.
So that's just something that over time, our listeners will hear more and more about, and I love the piece about being apprehensive to do it the first time, because I felt the same way the first time I ever walked into a shelter. And because I'm like, okay, either A, I'm going to want to take all the dogs home, B, I'm going to burst into tears, help me. But you're right. It turns out that at least around this area, the facilities are fabulous. They are so good to the dogs, and they have tons of volunteers. And it's really about just meeting some more cool dogs, man, and lending a hand for a while.
Exactly. If you think about it, Dee and Terry, we're all in the same business, as it were, because even though my little sphere right now is canine cancer, and some people's sphere are spay and neuter and rescue, we're all trying to speak for animals that can't speak for themselves. We have the same job essentially. That's the first part of it. The second part of it is that on a sociological level, we're trying to change the way that animals are viewed and perceived and treated in society. And I'm trying to do that in the world of canine cancer with getting, equivalent funding and comparative oncological studies. And we're doing that with animal abuse laws, spay and neutering, and so on and so forth. So really, if you think about it, so much of what we're, all of us are doing is the same thing.
It absolutely is, and the more of us who get involved, the more of us who take a stand, the more of us who say out loud, status quo is not okay. We have to do more. We have to do better, and we have to force the folks with the money to pony up.
That's right.
That's the bottom line of it all for me.
That's right. You're absolutely right. Status quo is no longer acceptable. Exactly right, indeed.
Well, I think this has been a great episode. I think that we made a lot of strong statements and a lot of provided a lot of good information to the listeners, Luke, but I think we're going to try and wrap this up. It's about 35 minutes into it. We appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk with us.
Hey, it's wonderful meeting you guys. Thank you so much for having us on your program.
Well, and we hope to do this again. We want to follow you as you journey across America, so hopefully we'll get you back on the show occasionally. For right now, before we leave, tell the folks where they can find you on the Internet.
Yeah, our website is 2dogs2000miles.org. That's the number 2dogs, the number 2000miles.org, or tweet us on Twitter. If you want to hear stories and see pictures from the road directly from me, then the best way to do that, we do have a blog, but the best way to do it in real time is on Twitter. I think Twitter's become such an effective tool for me to kind of let everybody know where we're at, tell some of the crazy stories that we often have, and see some of the really neat pictures, and see some of the wonderful things that we're seeing from the road. So, and actually, yes, and Hudson and Murphy are on Twitter too. So,
yeah.
They're Hudson and Murphy. That's their handle on Twitter. So that's the best way. Our website, and then on Twitter.
And folks, we'll have all the links up on our website. We will be focusing on the guys from our Twitters, from everywhere. We're on Facebook, we're everywhere, and everywhere we are, Luke and the boys will be. And Luke, again, thank you so very much for joining us today, and we'll be keeping an eye on you.
Thank you so much, guys. Puppy up.
Bye-bye, Luke. Nice to meet you.